Welcome to today's ICANN radio segment, an initiative of the Clarence Access Network, facilitated by the Clarence City Council. Stay with us now to hear powerful people with disability sharing their lived experiences of making a difference in employment, sport, housing and more.
I'm Paul, and this is the You Can Ask That forum. It's the first in our seven programme series. With me, I have Duncan, Tony and Kate. Let's go around the table and find out a little bit about each of them.
I'm Duncan Meeting. I'm a lighting and furniture designer maker. I work for myself. I'm also partially blind, with less than 5% vision concentrated around the periphery.
I'm Tony. I'm a freelance historian researching Southwest Tasmania. I have cerebral palsy.
Hi, I'm Kate. I've done many things in my life, including having my own business, and I'm currently a full-time student. I am also a mum of a child with spina bifida, and I have complex post-traumatic stress disorder myself.
I'm Paul Pritchard, and I'm an adventurer, a big wall climber, and I am living with a brain injury these past 23 years. Raspberry Ripple, Spaz, Mong, Cripple, Handicapped, Retard, Brave, Special, Inspiring. These are some names used to describe disabled people. I'm going to go around the table now and ask each one what names have been used to describe you, for instance, Kate.
I've been called many things. Crazy, schizo, probably schizo is the worst one, I think. It's a really negative experience to be called those names.
Tony, what about you?
Probably the most frequent one would have been retard or special, spastic. Most people don't know what spastic means. Well, I am spastic. I have spastic cerebral palsy. I suppose they're right.
And Duncan, what about you?
Well, I suppose maybe it's not so much a name, but some people have thought I was drunk when I wasn't, because I wasn't giving eye contact or I tripped over something. It's a sort of assumption that people make just from looking at the superficial, and that's where, like, I've had that name. But I suppose the other one I've had is where people get worried about what they call me, you know, whether they call me blind or vision impaired or partially sighted, and they're so worried about what they call me they forget that I'm a human being and how to talk with me.
The awkward silence.
I was walking along once and I was like tapping my cane along, and a kid asked from behind to their parent, "Mum, what's that stick for?" And the mum just goes, "Shh." Rather than just going, "Yeah, he's blind, he can't see well, or he's partially sighted, or he can't see very well, that's why he uses the stick." But people are so scared of that, and just going, "Okay, yeah, this person's got something different about them." They're so scared of offence that they just go, "Shh," and then, or they like hide from you on the street because they don't know what to say as you're walking towards them with a cane.
I've had people pulling their children away from me as well all the time.
But wouldn't you rather that someone actually came up to you and actually asked you a question like, "Oh, yes, why do you use your cane?"
I've had all sorts of things said to me. "When I look at you, I don't see a disabled person." As if there's something wrong with other disabled people, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Which does remind me of the trip we did, Paul, that's Duncan here, the ride we did from Lake Eyre to the top of Kosciuszko.
Yeah.
And somebody came up to us. We were like 4 weeks into this ride. It was pretty epic. It was pretty fun. And this person comes up to us and goes, "Oh, you guys are great. You're inspiring. This is amazing. But you made me feel like shit." The assumption is that because you've got a disability, you're immediately going to be worse at something than someone, which is an interesting discussion there, because it's like, well, no, it's just everyone has different abilities in different ways, with like disability is only one of the ones that comes in.
When I said that schizo is probably one of the worst things, there's always an assumption that if you've got a mental illness, then you've got the full range of mental illnesses. Not that I mind being called a schizophrenic, it just isn't what I am. But also people make that assumption that once they hear that you've had a mental illness or you live with one, they're a little bit suspicious of you all the time. And they do expect you to sort of fall apart more readily than other people.
And what about you, Tony? What's the anecdotes that are about what when people have said things to you?
Well, I mean, the typical one is the joke that I'm drunk, or people trying to help you. The hard one to deal with when people help you, because or try to help you and they're hindering. I mean, it's nice that they're trying to help, but they're hindering, and how do you do that politely? Yeah. Thanks, but no thanks.
Well, Duncan, you've had some interesting help, haven't you?
I think people offering help and people helping you are two different things. If someone can tell that, like, it's maybe a bit of a tricky intersection and do you want a hand, it's not a problem to come up, from my perspective at least, you know, and say, do you need a hand? But people that come up, don't identify themselves and just start grabbing you by your arm and start dragging you across the road.
By your cane?
Yeah, I actually have had somebody pick up my cane as I'm walking and start pulling it. I'm like, dude, you can't do that. And I'm not just talking about, like, people that should know better, like in airports and things like that. And you're like, why are you picking up my cane? You're effectively grabbing my glasses and throwing them on the ground. Like, it's effectively the same thing. The help thing is, like, your offer, and if someone says yes, you ask them how.
Well, I fall over quite a lot, and I get people in that half my weight trying to help me out. Physically impossible. You got to explain to them that it's easier just to pick myself up. Carry on.
I was at the shops with my younger son who has spina bifida. Old people often come up and say, hello, how are you? Then, oh, isn't he a dear? And then I have had people give me money. Just hand over $5. Oh, yeah. He's a pet. You need this. And I'd say, yeah. Oh, no, thanks. Don't need your money. And they'd say, no, buy him something special.
With my business, I design, make lights and furniture and stuff, and people get really focused on the fact that I use power tools with my vision. And they're just like, oh, you're an inspiration. It's like, well, actually, no. The fact that you're getting inspired by me actually highlights the inadequacies of the way society's structured at the moment and the assumptions that people make. The things I use are just skills that I've either developed or learnt from others of how to approach machines and things safely. But there's this huge assumption. It's like, well, if you can't see the blade, you're going to cut fingers. Like, sighted people have not cut their fingers off before. It's like, you know, come on. Like, in some respects, some of the skills I've learnt not being able to see what's going on has actually been good. They're so heavily focused on that they forget to actually check out the work for its merits. It's like this focus on the individual rather than it's like, well, okay, how do we develop these systems and put them in place to try and make it so that there are more vision impaired and blind carpenters or furniture makers or what have you, and not focus on it being an exception and make it more of a norm.
Tony, have you ever been called an inspiration?
People were always saying that me doing my physics degree was inspirational. Someone with a cerebral palsy can actually do brain work. The expectations we place on disabled people are different.
What about you? Have you ever been called the I word?
I have, Kate? Been called the I word. Yeah. I get called inspirational because when I wanted to have children, we set out to have children, I was actually told by my GP that I was the sort of person that shouldn't have children. People like you don't have children, he said. We promptly left that GP. So when I did go on to have children, people were constant, oh, Kate, you've come so far. Oh, you're doing so well. A lot of people thought I'd really flunk it, but I didn't. I'm a really good mum and I love it. Part of it was that when my children were very little, I didn't actually tell people who didn't know me before that I had a mental illness because I didn't want them to actually treat me differently. Once they did and I was much more open with it as I am now, then I get the, wow, you know, you do all that and you're depressed. That's amazing. So it's like, But in fact, I must say, having a mental illness in my early life, by the time I got to have children in my 30s, I was actually really good with postnatal depression because I knew how to cope with it. I knew how to handle it.
Oh, yeah.
So I did get PND and I got antenatal anxiety, but I had so many skills that it was great. And I'm actually finding too now that I can handle my teens going through anxiety and depression because I've got all that experience. to call on. So I guess, yeah, the I word comes out every now and then, but usually people who just have no idea, really, no understanding. As a parent with a child with disability, that inspiration becomes really important because he's 11 and we're now trying to expose him to people that he can go, ah, I'm not so different. I can do anything that I want to do. I guess for him, Dylan Alcott's become a bit of a... And because that's what Dylan says, that's what he wants to do, is because he didn't see people like himself growing up. So we're trying to get Charlie to see all sorts of people to be inspired by, but particularly people who have a disability like he does, because at the moment he just feels so very different in his mainstream school. But, yeah, so we're seeking out inspiration at the moment for him.
Disability being a social construct in some respects. It's like how do we other the person, and then how do we put stairs everywhere and then go, well, oh, you're disabled because you're in the wheelchair. It's like, well, hang on, isn't the stairs the problem, not the wheelchair? Like you know, that's a really crude metaphor there, but that's like quite a clear one.
That kind of brings us nicely into a second topic about access.
People with mental illness, I would say access is different. It's not as obvious and it's primarily attitudinal. When I've been in the health system, attitudes that I was presented with were very confronting amongst staff as well as people around me. And it limits you, but it limits you in conversation. You tend to hide.
What about you, Tony?
For me, it relates to assumptions quite a lot. People assume that I can't climb stairs. I'm perfectly happy climbing stairs, and so it's easier than walking on flat ground in a way. And often the provisions for physical access into a building for disabled people a longer walk, so you might have to walk
to get to the
twice as far to get to the ramp.
Being vision impaired and having access is an interesting one as well, because I do have the same issues that you've probably had, Tony, in terms of assuming you can't go up the stairs. And actually it was going up and down stairs that someone grabbed my cane. And it's like, I don't think people quite realise how dangerous that can be. The access, I think, is a really interesting one. It's because for me, in particular, with like sensory issues, I need to be able to access information in an accessible format. I use text-to-speech software, so my computer and my phone talk to me. And there's a lot of people out there that need to have this sort of accessibility requirements, you know, whether it's someone with vision impairment, someone with dyslexia, or, you know, and everything in between, you know. There's a range of different disabilities in terms of access, but, like, I needed that for university, and sometimes, you know, if I didn't get my readings in time, that would have impacts on my overall degree or my overall study. And equally, like with my business, I quite regularly get sent photos of an RFQ document, a request for quote document, and it's just literally just click, and it's like someone's taken a photo of a hand scrawled thing on a serviette. So it's really like important for me to get information in an accessible format.
For me, it's that Centrelink automated phone system. I'm just not fast enough, because my brain probably works about half the speed of other people, and I keep fumbling my phone or something as well. Because of my hemiplegia, I can't access it at all.
They often have a thing that involves speech recognition. Well, it doesn't work pretty good for me, I'm afraid.
I think it's interesting that we have so many access issues, and yet statistically in Tasmania, 26% of Tasmanians identify as having disability.
Wow.
That is one in four, isn't it?
Quite.
Yeah. You either know someone who has disability, you know someone caring for that person, or you are that person pretty much, and yet we still have this attitude of building stairs, forgetting to put in ramps. I think in a new building in the last 12 months, the new executive building where the premier is, they decided in the business, in the plans, to exclude a lift at one end of the building. So everybody has to go to the other end of the building to get in. You know, and it's not just people with disability either, is it? It's people with a pram or, you know, whatever, heavy item.
The access one's an interesting one. We're just talking about the one in four. You know, we're talking about disability and othering. And it's like, well, a lot of people in the process of being othered when they've got a disability. It's like, well, actually, that's a pretty damn large minority, really, if you think about it. And that's not even counting the people that will have a disability later. It's something that will affect people, the way they interact with society all the time, and not seems to be, or doesn't always seem to be taken into account. And that sort of goes back to the access sort of mentality. It's like your access audit rather than, well, why don't we just make it accessible from the outset? I was involved in a project last year, the Disordinary Architecture Project engaged me to come over and be a guest teaching fellow with the University College of London for a course called Architecture Beyond Sight. And the aim was a bridging course to get more blind and vision impaired people into architecture and design, and by giving them skills to be able to get into them. But also the process of doing it was also trying to open the mindset of the actual university in terms of that sort of concept, because it's quite a big concept to think about if you sort of go from where we're at now to the concept of making architecture and access, like access being embedded in architecture, not audited on at the end. That was a really interesting one, because the concept was, let's flip it on its head and let's talk about how can we make the access positively influence society rather than access being a negative or dirty word, or disability being a dirty word. It's like, well, how do we make things move in a positive way?
Thanks heaps for the illuminating chat. Today we've heard from Kate Holly Coward, Tony Fenton, Duncan Meerdink, and I'm Paul Pritchard.
For more information on the ICANN program, you can contact Julie Anderson on 6217 9597 or visit the Clarence City Council website. Hobart FM, supporting our community.